The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deake speaking.
And welcome to FOFOP. I am Will Anderson, and joining me, guest Charlie, Justin Hamilton, is back. Hello, Hamo. We are, it's about half an hour later than we were meant to start recording because we had a little bit of a chat, just an off-air chat, a little catch-up first, and then I heard my dog barking at the door, and then what you, I imagine, heard from your end was just me going, oh, no.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I couldn't see you. You just disappeared outside somewhere, and I heard that. Luckily, the tone of it was, this is disappointing, and not, this is real trouble. And it turned out it was disappointing because I don't want to name and shame, but one of you dogs decided, how good is horse poo? I'm going to cover myself in it because I want to be in Predator. I'm scared that the Predator's going to attack me. The only thing that the Predator can't come near is camouflaged in horse poo. That's how I like to picture it.
Well, you've described it perfectly because that's exactly what, and I'll name her and shame her because I had to go upstairs and bathe her instead of starting my podcast. I was doing a poo cast, and her name is Winona. Winnie, who, this is the problem with Winnie. So if it was Ramona, it may have taken me a minute to realize because she is like, you know, she's got like kind of dark grayish, you know, blackish grayish hair now. So it might not have shown up so readily, but on Winnie, who is like white with sort of, you know, different patches of like brown and black on her, she was immediately brown. She was a brown dog, Justin, and I don't own a brown dog, a greenish brown camouflage dog. I barely saw her as she came in. She looked exactly like she was in Predator. That is exactly what she looked like. It was like she'd just gone, I have to make sure that I get a light coating of horse poo over every single bit of my body. And that's the difference between, say, horse poo and cow poo. Like cow poo, you get like clumps and lumps and like sticky hair. The horse poo is quite firm and grassy, and so she really just looked like she'd gone in for a fucking green spray tan. That's what she looked like. She looked like Donald Trump in the before pictures before he went to hospital, not Donald Trump in the after pictures when he was suddenly like a white man. That was basically what I did. I had to get her from Donald Trump ordinarily to Donald Trump in hospital in about 15 minutes so we could start the podcast.
That is amazing. It's like she's been hanging out with the dog equivalent of body artist Emma Hack. I'm curious if the black dog represents depression, I'm guessing the brown dog just represents disappointment. And can we give a whole lot of dogs different colours to represent the spectrum of emotions?
Well, I would say normally, because she's a white dog, she's quite innocent.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, white, that's probably, like, there's probably some sort of race theory that could tell you why we identify black as being bad and white as being good, and it probably comes from some terrible place. So I even hesitate to go for those norms. But when we think of an angel, we think white. When we think of, like, the devil on the shoulder, they're dressed in red or black, right? Right. That's just the traditional representation of how we've seen those things. She's normally very innocent, but that innocence allows her to do things like, she's the high school prefect who's broken out of the boarding school, skipped over the fence for the night and come home covered in horse shit smelling glitter.
It doesn't quite understand how it's happened. Did she feel awful about it? Like, was she looking at you as if she
Absolutely not one bit. Yeah. No, she loves it because she has, like, this is a twofer for her. This is the second time this week that I've had to do this. I have to find the hole in the fence that she's getting through because I've plugged some other holes.
Wait a second. It's Monday. What do you mean the second time this week?
Well, second time within a week.
Oh, okay. I was like...
Right, within... I don't measure time in any traditional sense anymore, Justin. I don't know what you're fucking talking about. I just am like, it was sometime in the last 7 days right. that I also had to do this. And she sneaks through a hole in the fence. She goes and finds like a big pile of horse poo. There's plenty there in the paddock with the horses. And she rolls around in it. And then she dutifully trots straight back up to the house, understands exactly what's going to happen next, because the minute I open the door, she goes up and she sits in the bathroom and she waits to have a bath. For her, it's like she loves rolling in the poo and yeah. she loves having a bath. So she also knows if she rolls in the poo, she's going to get that second thing. Like if she just asked me for a bath, I'd give her a fucking bath. You right. don't need to roll in the poo before the bath. But right. she knows that one follows the other. Like she immediately goes to the bathroom.
That is some inadvertent training right there, isn't it?
Well, that's maybe I should have made her sit in her own poo, in the horse poo for a while, but
yeah.
I didn't really feel like that was the responsible thing to do.
Especially if the RSPCA are listening to this particular podcast.
I don't think they would take away your dog for letting it sit in horse poo for like an hour while you recorded a podcast, but maybe they would. Maybe that's...
you'd definitely get an all caps tweet directed at you.
I mean, I think there is something like great about, say, you've had a big weekend and you haven't had a shower for a couple of days and you finally get to have a shower. There is yeah. something, or you've done a hard day's work, you know, like, you know, you've been out, like, you know, outside working hard, quite physically, you've been very sweaty, that shower does feel even better than it ordinarily would. So I guess maybe in her mind, it's like, well, I want a bath, but I might as well get as dirty as I can possibly get just before I go in the bath.
I want to make it worthwhile for everyone.
Right.
But you've gone on an incredible journey as someone who does not cope with poo to someone who now picks up poo. And I have to say, you deserve some kudos for it, because once upon a time you couldn't even talk about it without gagging, and now you are like a ninja with your plastic bags and your slow motion lean down to pick it up and stand up again.
I mean, that's I guess what getting a pet trains you for, right? That's right. why they say you get a pet before you have a baby, because right. like they don't want you to, the first time your baby poos itself, you're like, how long is it going to do this for?
Yeah.
3 years. You don't just throw it away immediately.
Yeah.
You train by getting an animal and getting used to picking up their poo first and dealing with poo. I will say, of the poos to deal with, horse poo would be right up there in the, like, it's always quite dry. It's lumpy. It doesn't get too like smelly or sticky. It's kind of actually just smells a bit like freshly cut grass, you know?
Right.
Because that's all it really is. It's just like cut grass that has gone through some sort of process and come out at pallets the other end. It's not particularly offensive. But the problem is with it that it naturally in color is a little like some of the natural color that she already has. So some of her dog patches are the same color. So you get down to, you've given her a good wash and you're not sure if you haven't washed like her leg properly or if that's just how her leg looks.
Right.
And so it gets a bit mysterious towards the end where I give some things an extra scrub until I realize, oh no, that's just the color of her hair there.
Yeah, right. And I'm curious, what does Ramona do during all of this? Does she look down her nose? Does she wonder why she's not getting a bath? Is she hanging out with the cat judging Winona?
Ordinarily, they both get baths. So Ramona comes straight into the bathroom. She sat there and watched me give Winnie a bath. Winnie didn't get the full bath experience. Normally I run a bit of a bath and she like, you know, actually gets to sit like in the bath. And then I use like a plastic container to, you know, sort of like gently sort of, you know, give her a bath and give her a good scrub. And she gets the, you know, fancy hairdresser where you've spent $150. You get like a good shampoo and conditioner yeah. where you get a little bit of a massage as well.
Yeah.
Today. And then Ramona gets one normally. But yeah. Ramona got one within the last week.
Yeah.
And for the same reason. I didn't have time to wash both of them. So Winnie got we've got one of those baths that has like a hose, like, you know, not a hose, but, you know, like a little shower and a hose, whatever you call that.
Yeah.
Whatever that attachment is called. And so Winnie definitely got that. She right. got the dude at the car wash, you know, giving her a spray underneath and a spray on a top and a pretty perfunctory You know, it's very much your just cuts shampoo and condition. Yeah. Dry your own fucking hair. Yeah. You know, she's sitting back here half dried and the rest nature can deal with.
Yeah, she's a bit at the moment going, well, I rolled in the horse poo. Why haven't I gotten the full service? This is bullshit.
Exactly.
And so could you imagine if you decide that you've had enough of comedy that maybe the dog cleaning business is what you could do in Byron? I feel like there'd be some pun screaming out to be used as a business name.
Was not a dog person before I had dogs. Like, I like dogs, but I just wasn't one of those people who... I still don't know which breeds of dogs are which breeds and all those sort of things. I like my dogs. Would I want to... I will wash off her poo for free because she is my dog. But if she was not my dog and she had poo on her and the only incentive I had for washing that poo off was like $20, no fucking way. Like, that is not... No, not a fucking
haven't made that much progress.
No. It's the equivalent of holding your girlfriend's hair back while she vomits in the toilet. That is the level I'm at with. Yeah, I find it adorable because it is her, but otherwise I would still find it a little bit grotesque.
On some other dog. Do you end up, you know, like, I've always said and thought that one of the biggest fears of having children is having to be friends with the parents of other kids, because kids are friends with kids for dumb reasons, and then you're stuck with these people that you have to hang out with that are intrinsically a nightmare because they're just not your people. And do you find that, like, if you take the dogs to the park or something, do you end up in conversations with the type of people that you would normally pretend to talk about the kitchen?
What do you think?
It sounds like one of your three key nightmares of existence.
Again, I wanted a couple of dogs. I didn't want like a dozen new friendships.
Yeah.
I wanted a couple of dogs. No. Luckily, they don't really like particularly love other dogs anyway. Like, you know, they'll love other dogs for a bit, but then it'll get, you know, they'll either get bored or in a fight. So they there's not much like social aspect to it. It's normally like, yep, there's some other dogs. Let's move on from those other dogs. Yep. Let's go. So I don't get stuck in that. But yesterday I did have...
Or a week
so
ago.
So I had two... Well, yes, within the last week, within the last 7 days, who knows? Might have been tomorrow. But it was definitely within either a week back from here or a week forward from here this happened. We had two sets of friends over to the house and they both have two boys. So we had four boys from age 9 to 5 at the house yesterday. And like the kids didn't know each other, but like, you know, they're young boys. So they all just immediately become, you know, best friends in the world and just run around the house like nonstop. And it was exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, we did one afternoon of it, and they're not our kids, and it was absolutely 100% exhausting.
Yeah, they just get in the way, and you have to keep an eye on them all the time, and you can't watch the TV shows you want to watch, and you don't get to listen to the music you want to listen to anymore, and they cost heaps. And you're always, because you love them, you're always a little bit afraid and having to keep an eye out for them. And it just seems like a lot of hard work. And I am rapt that I cannot relate to any of that.
Well, our house is good for kids. Like, the kids loved the house, right?
Oh, because yeah. Well, it's massive.
We've got dogs. Yep. It's a big old house that they could run around. There's upstairs, downstairs. There's like a little dungeon area. There's a pool. There's like, you know, all the things that like boys like to do, you know. You can just like, you know, like run around, play with sticks. But also we have a PlayStation and only adult games. And it turns out there is a point in the afternoon where the parents just want to talk to their adult friends that while at home you not might not be able to play like, you know, Fortnite with your friends. It turns out that if the only game your adult kids people with no kids have is Grand Theft Auto and Tekken, you get to play Grand Theft Auto and Tekken even if you're 5. You're just like, we just tell him it's a driving game. He doesn't need to know the rest of the details.
Yeah, he doesn't need to know all that horrific violence that's occurring on the outside of the car. Just stay in the car.
Yeah, just stay in the car. You're 5.
Yeah. I can understand that. All your principles are out the window when you just want to have a chat about something with sentences that require more than 5 syllables, right?
This is the other thing that, of course, because I'm just not around kids enough, you forget that there is a big difference between, say, 5 and 9
yes.
in the ages of, like, kids' maturity. So they're all down by the pool and the dads are down by the pool watching the kids as they're sort of jumping in and out of the pool. And there's a couple of bees hanging around. Not many bees, but, like, a couple of bees. And they're not bothering anybody, but, you know, the kids have spotted the bees and now they're running around shouting at the bees. And so I tell the kids that just to be careful that one of the bees, most of the bees are really friendly, but one of the bees is a killer bee and I just can't remember which one it is, right? And that joke goes pretty well. Like, they kind of enjoy, I think they mostly all know that I am joking at this point. But right. then I make the mistake of laying it on a little bit more thickly because then I say...
Yeah, because you got a good response. And so you thought, well, this is a good time. I'll do what I do on stage. I'll go the 7th joke.
I said, I've got them here. I've got them. I've got these kids. And 2 of the kids are wearing black and yellow. And so I say, as if I haven't realized they're wearing black and yellow, I said, and the truth is they only ever attack things that they think are other bees. So as long as you're not dressed in the same colors as a bee, you'll be totally fine. And then I lose one of the kids.
Yeah. Who'd have thought that that would end so terribly?
Turns out if you're young enough and a stranger, basically a stranger tells you that one of the bees is a killer bee and attacks people wearing what you're wearing, that turns out is a bit too much for some young kids.
Yeah, that's great. And how did you feel about losing half the audience?
You know what the thing was? I don't think I lost the rest of the crowd. I think we just had to deal with that guy. Like, you know, he had to do a bit of, like, you know, dad action where dad was like, there is no killer bees, man. It's fine.
Yeah.
He's just making a joke.
Yeah.
I think he actually said, that's what Will does for a living. He makes jokes. And the kid went, well, it wasn't very funny.
Oh. Yeah, wow. That's a brutal retort.
I mean, what I wanted to say was the rest of the crowd were loving it, man.
Like, yeah.
You should have seen the look of delight on the rest of the faces. I lost what you. I get it, but...
What are you, a street press reviewer from 1998?
Yeah. How old are you? 7? Let's come. Let's play Grand Theft Auto. It'll be fine.
It'll be so much better. A good friend of ours, Craig Egan, is poor. You know, he's got his son Banjo is, I think, 2.5 now, or 2¾, and his daughter Evie is coming up to 1. And they are just, you know, at that stage where they are germ machines. And he is so sick at the moment. But, you know, he walks into the kitchen and there's Banjo, you know, licking the door. And there's his daughter, Evie, just picking up random bits of fluff and putting them in her mouth, which is all good because that's them building up their own resistance. But he has been as sick as a dog and he has been, poor bugger's been really, really struggling. And they're also trying to keep them away from his partner who's, you know, Lauren's really busy doing stuff. So he's kind of in this weird quarantine within the own house watching, you know, picking up on their stuff as well.
Is there a chance that he's got to go with if you can't beat him, join him? Like every time they lick a doorknob, he should also lick the doorknob. Every
Absolutely.
Time they eat some fluff, maybe he needs to build up his immunity as well.
Right. Get on the fluff diet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you ate some fluff, I'm going to eat some fluff.
Yeah. Light on the calories, build up the resistance. There you go. That's how you sell it.
Light on the calories and not very fizzy so you can slam it down fast and build up your resistance. Fluff.
Fluff.
You can find it on your ground.
Just a really masculine man who doesn't get a cold, just knocking it back.
Yeah, I haven't had a snuffly nose, mate, and I would order fluff. Yeah, just everyday household fluff. Pick it off the ground, whack it in your gob. It's fluff.
Yeah. You don't have to grill it. You don't have to boil it. You don't have to cook it. Add some lemon if you want. Fluff.
Yeah. Fluff.
Lots of guys with really dry mouths trying to sell it. It's really great.
Would be a secret fluff. Me and Lauren. Fluff.
I haven't had a cold in 5 years.
What have you been up to, Justin Hamilton? What's been going on in your world?
What have I been up to? We did the live show at Giant Dwarf in the past week.
How did that go? Within the past 7 days or so?
In the past 7 days. Yeah, it was really good. It was a lot of fun. And I think I was saying to you earlier, I really like putting things together. I like producing stuff, and I like coordinating people and then trying to find ways to, you know, bring a show together. And I felt like it coalesced really well for a, you know, like it's the first time you do anything, you feel relatively confident, but you never know until you get there if there's going to be something that'll take you by surprise. So we produced that, and that was my, that's only the second gig I've done since March. And it was a really nice feeling to be on stage again and have that very specific bolt of adrenaline that comes with live performance.
I feel like my body's better without the adrenaline. And I mean,
oh yeah, I'm exhausted today. Like, I'm really sore. I've been tired for the last 48 hours. I'm not sure it was healthy, but it was addictive at the time, Your Honor.
I mean, at some stage I will do my first gig again, and there are obviously gigs running. There are gigs in my local area. I've noticed in the, you know, a couple of the theaters around where I live have opened up and started doing shows again. And there is, yep. I even got invited to a show the other night as an audience member. Somebody was like, hey, I'm going to go and see this comedy gig. Do you want to come along to the gig? And I was like, no, I don't think I want to do that. But I'm not, I don't think that I'm ready to do it again yet either. I don't think I will be for a while. There's a small part of me that's like, you're going to die before you do another gig. And I'm like,
goodness.
And look, I could. It's right. Actually in that zone now. I'm at that stage in my life where at some stage I could just like die. And then like my last ever gig I did would be that Sunday night in a tent at the Adelaide Fringe.
Oh, that's a... I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you stay healthy.
It was a good show. I'm happy to.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's not too bad. Well, it's funny. I don't know if I really have. I've booked in a stand-up gig in the next week and a half, which I think will be fine. But I actually enjoyed making this a lot more. I enjoyed, having interviewing people. You know, we had Cal Wilson who'd pre-recorded a whole lot of clips as Adele, and it just felt like a bit of a show. And I think I kind of enjoyed having the interaction more than I have the desire to just stand by myself and say things.
Well, the world has changed a little bit that you can do that. I mean, you're doing it a lot with your podcast world anyway, but this is just an extension of that, isn't it? Like adding pictures and movement and that sort of stuff into the mix, but also the idea that it's appointment viewing, that you say to people, hey, tune in on this thing at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, and you know, people gather around their computers or their TVs or whatever there is, and they are actually at a show, but it's like a show that you have made. It's not just an hour of you doing stand-up, or it's just not you doing a set. It's like, here's this, like, I've made a TV show. This is Saturday Night Hammo. That's what you should have called it. You should have called it Saturday Night Hammo.
Live from Giant Dwarf. It's well, you know what it does. You know what it does tell you is that there's way too much put into live television. It turns out you can just make it. Like you can literally have a very small team of people, and you can just say, hey, I'm going to do this, and have some people say, yeah, we'll do this technical stuff, and then you just do it, and it's up, and you can bypass a lot of the faffing about that comes with working in television.
Yeah, which is pretty cool, right? That's an exciting idea. What was the I won't say highlight because I'm sure it was all awesome, but what was the sort of unexpected thing that happened that you didn't realize was going to happen?
I was so impressed with the Giant Dwarf team and how smooth it was. Like, that was the, you know, because so for anyone who didn't see it, it had a little bit of audio at the start and the end, and because I wanted people to not have to sit through transitions of people, of guests walking on and off stage, Cal Wilson as Adele did these pre-recorded clips where she was introducing the acts from deep in isolation in Melbourne. And Cal is just objectively one of the funniest people in the country, and Adele is a very funny character. And everything just ran really, really smoothly. And everyone, it was funny, people like Ben Elwood, who hasn't performed for a while as well, and was a little bit like, performing. He got on stage and I could see him buzzing, and I thought, Mr. Cynical, looks like someone's having a good time. But it was also, what I really enjoyed was, if I had pitched this idea to anyone in TV, they would have told me it wouldn't work. And they would have been wrong, because it just does work, because you just put like-minded people together. So you can have Ben on talking about the movie Cats, and then you can follow it up with Richard Feidler talking about his new book and doing a reading. And then we had Beck Dainamuno and Beck Melrose, and I interviewed Beck Dainamuno about her improv career, and then we just segued into an improv game without telling anyone, so then people could witness the skill set that she'd been talking about in action. And then Georgia Mooney was on talking about her love of Joni Mitchell and played a song for us, and it's like, there you go, that's a show. And didn't have to, who's the demo? It's just people who are into shit. And there's heaps of those people. Why not just give people some stuff? Stuff and fluff.
Demo? It's always my favorite question when someone's like, who's the demo for this? I don't know, the people who turn it on and watch it.
Yeah. Like,
we'll make something and then we'll find our demo. I don't know who the demo are yet. How do I know who this is going to fucking appeal to? I hope people who like good shit.
Yes. That's it. That's it exactly. Just people into stuff. Stuff and fluff. That's all I want in my life.
Stuff and brought to you by Fluff. You should get a sponsorship agreement with Fluff and just do little advertisements from Fluff in between.
Yeah, I would gladly spruik Fluff. You know how I feel about it. But it's and it was just it was a really fun show. And then, you know, we even had a Marvel's after credits scene where we didn't tell anyone. And then if anyone hung around, it was Adele who wanted to say goodbye and the show was finished. And it was just literally her taking way too long to turn off all the lights in her apartment by herself.
Did it make you want to do those things more regularly?
So in an ideal world, like, this is getting ahead. Like, I think we'll do another one. I'm going to see if I can get another one up and running in, like, 6 weeks' time and, like, do an atheist Christmas party show. Mm-hmm. But in an ideal world, if I could do that each week and make enough of a living from it and do that for a few years, that would sound like a really good way to spend a few years.
It is one of those things where that's achievable, right? Like, it's not easily achievable, but it's achievable. And I think that this new world of just going, hey, I like these people and I like what they do. Instead of me having to go, hey, what's on Graham Norton? Graham Norton's a good show, but it doesn't mean that it's the only show. And Graham Norton, by the nature of Graham Norton, is always going to interview guests that are of a Graham Norton caliber. It's always going to be Margot Robbie and Matt Damon and Michael Caine. You know, it's got to be, because that show is so big. Even with, like, you know, Colbert or Jimmy Fallon, these sort of people, they're not going to be interviewing, like, there. And as you said, there are so many brilliant and interesting people who aren't, you know, necessarily at that level, but that you still want to hear from, that you still want to hear discuss things or play music or, you know, do comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, and all over the world as well. Like, we had a woman called Linda who got up at 5 a.m. to watch in Florida, you know, and like, she's not understanding any disparaging references to Sam Newman, but as I pointed out, it seems like she won that moment, but it is...
Yeah. But also, you'll pick it up.
You'll pick it up, yeah.
You'll pick it up.
You'll get the idea of it, you know? And I think if you just... I think everything is... And I know I'm saying this to you because... And it's like preaching to the converted, but everything is overthought. Everything has too much money thrown at it too quickly, therefore putting an unfair pressure on it way too early, and there's too many people who don't have a creative bone in their body who think they know how to be creative. It's like, you know, it's like graphic design. People were good at graphic design and then everyone could do it, so everyone thought they could do it. But there's only some people who know how to actually design. And you know that because you go to the comedy festival and you look at a poster and you go, that's 19 too many fonts. Do you know what I mean? So that's the issue. And then everything gets watered down and diluted. You know, I always say to people, like, people forget, like, that they say you got to dumb things down for the audience. And I think that is just so incorrect, because I remember, and you remember, an era where the most popular show on TV was MASH. And sometimes that comedy show wouldn't have a laugh track because it was a really serious episode. And as a viewer, you would sit there and you go, oh, it's a serious episode. And then the next episode, when they're in their dressing gowns and they're gambling, you go, hey, it's the gambling episode. And people just kind of went with it. So I think we dismiss the general public too often.
I would like, though, if you start doing it MASH style. So, for example, three out of four, or like, you know, four out of, you know, five. Funny episodes, good mixes of like a bit of drama and a bit of interest, but like, you know, mostly comedy. And then just out of the blue, one week, it's like a super serious episode.
You know, I could do that too. Yeah. That is in my wheelhouse. I would gladly do that. And I feel like people would be into it. And then the next week, I'd be in a Hawaiian shirt and everyone go, he's back.
But again, I guess there's no reason why you can't do stuff like that. I mean, I know with Gruen, that's one of the things we've always been really conscious of is like, yeah, it's mostly a light entertainment show, but because it's an interesting show as well, sometimes, I remember in the first season we ever did, like one of the first, Emma Thompson had made this, Todd Sampson and I were talking about this on Philosophy the other day, so it's top of mind, but like Emma Thompson had made this, you know, anti-sex trafficking, you know, advertisement, and it was her being, you know, sexually assaulted, like, you know, so incredibly powerful ad, but no way you could ever like make any jokes about it. So you're basically saying there's going to be 8 minutes or 10 minutes of our show that there's not going to be any laughs in, but this thing is compelling enough that we think people won't care that there's no laughs in this bit because, you know, the content is compelling. And as soon as we did that, we kind of got what the show was. And that's the difference between the ABC and a commercial network. We just never would have been able to do that at a commercial network. You know, they would have just been like, no, this is testing really well. People like the light entertainment stuff. Get Todd and Russell to argue some more. You know, bada bing, bada bang. That's every episode. That's what your demo is. Your demo is people who like to see Todd and Russell argue about things. That's your demo now. Your demo is not like, you know, playing really horrible sexual assault ads and then talking about them seriously.
Yeah, there's no way that you can lose if you're leaning into being interesting, and interesting is a good thing. And I think also I think especially in commercial radio, when they decide they're going to have a serious segment or, you know, lean into something like that, it's always kind of made too much of a fuss. Now we're going to be a little bit serious and we're going to talk about something that's affecting thousands of people all around the world. And then the very next thing will be, right, and now we're going to be funny. What's up with The Bachelor? Hey, you know.
Well, there's this thing that Triple M, that I used to work for, do that I actually think is one of the best things that they do, which is they have this day where they play no ads. They have none of their announcers on. And the whole idea is like, we're shutting up today so that you guys can talk. And it's about, you know, male suicide and male mental health. Yep. And they come up with some campaigns around it and they give all the right numbers and whatever. But, and I do like it. I think it's a really good thing. But it can run the risk of, without what you're saying, like, if you just make it a thing, if you go, here's our moment where we're leaning into this, but you're not, the point isn't shut up. The point is when you're having your regular conversations, also talk about this shit. Like it's not about shutting up for a day. It's about making sure that, you know, one in every five conversations, you know, we think about this really important topic, because one day a year is not going to fix it. It's got to be a conversation we're having 365 days a year.
We aren't mad for giving everything one day, you know.
One day. Are you okay? No, today. Yep. I do not give a shit how you were yesterday, and I'm not going to ask you tomorrow, but are you okay day, so are you okay?
I'm good.
No, it's not Are You OK Day, so I'm not actually interested in your answer now. Yes, that was a rhetorical question.
Right,
it was a trick, and I'll ask you again next Are You OK Day.
Yeah, which will be sometime in the past 7 days or future 7 days. But, you know, it's always I think those things start off in the right place.
I agree.
But after a while, to be honest, I think they get reduced to – people forget the reason that you initially instigated something like this, and then it eventually just becomes a new way to market round 7 of the AFL. And I think some of those things would be a lot more powerful if you just had them all the time. Like, rather than the Indigenous round, what about everyone's away Guernseys got the Aboriginal prints, and maybe the Aboriginal flag is always flying, like, you know? And how about violence towards women? Let's like make that better all the time. Let's not just focus on it this round. And I think that would actually be more beneficial to general society rather than just saying, yep, there's your 24 hours and let's move on.
Maybe they've got 8 games a weekend. Maybe each of the games, you pick your 8 issues.
Right.
You say, okay, we're passionate about Indigenous inclusion. Passionate about different sexualities being included and felt welcome in the game. We want to represent the country. We want to look at our heritage. We want to have a weekend that's dedicated to, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, instead of having weekends, you just dedicate one of the games each round. So you're like, you guys are playing in the Pride game this weekend.
Yeah. No, so it depends on the how good the game's going to be. So Brisbane versus Collingwood gets, you know, that's the Pride match this week. And Adelaide versus Fremantle is my dog just rolled in fucking horse shit again around.
Or should we get the players involved a little bit? And what happens is at the toss, whoever wins the toss gets to nominate what the thing that they're playing for that game is. Like, you know, sort of a shout out to their cause of the week. So you get the, you know, the toss of the coin. Both of the captains have a cause up their sleeve that they're going to play for on the day.
Yeah.
And the winner of the toss gets to nominate what the game's for.
Yeah. We will kick in that direction, and we are going to be playing for halitosis in drive share riders. how can we fix this?
Are you for it or against it?
No, totally against it. we're trying to fix it. a friend of mine who is not an AFL fan just hasn't been brought up with AFL was telling me that she'd seen a grand final once and was kind of horrified and couldn't stop watching the bit where the little kids give the medal. And she was saying that, you know, some of them are really nice, but some of those guys, when they're getting the medal on, barely, it's almost like they're putting their hands down and almost pushing that kid out the way so they can turn around in the middle of the field and make a noise that nobody can hear unless they're at home watching it on TV.
Well, I mean, maybe they're like me. Maybe the players are leaning down going, you know, one of these other kids is a murderer. And
it's okay, they're only going to tackle kids in North Melbourne Guernseys. Kids wearing a North Melbourne Guernsey. Oh, this is a disaster. It does feel like a setup for a Will Ferrell moment, though, doesn't it? Will Ferrell yelling at kids would be one of the funniest things I would get to watch. So I'd almost prefer someone to just go the full Ferrell, as it were.
It's an interesting moment, isn't it? Because you're prepared for so many things. But the fact that after you've achieved this thing that you've been training towards and working towards and playing towards for all this time, the final thing that you have to deal with is getting your medal off a little kid. Like, it's like this final sort of trick hurdle just to see if you can still lose the crowd. Like, you would have to say that the PR person at the club's got to sit them down going, we don't want to preempt anything. Obviously, you know, either team could win on the weekend, but we're just saying if you do win, please don't bash a child out of the way to get your medal.
Yeah. Don't push him out of the way so you can pump two fists to people hundreds of meters away. You do come around to the guys that who are quite clearly full of the adrenaline, who still take the time to take a knee, look the kid in the eye, have a little chat with him before they put the hat on and pat them on the head. Even if it's someone that you don't particularly like as a player, if you see them do that, they rise quite highly in my view of them.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you don't actually know what they're saying to the kid. They could be saying anything. They could be down on their knee just going, "You're never going to achieve this, are you, kid? This is as close you're ever going to get to sporting glory." And then just like put his hat on him. Kid's just there crying. This is the best
moment. Leaning down.
This is the best moment of my life and the best moment of your life, Tiger. Scruffs his head.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. How good is it that at five, you are never going to achieve anything as momentously great as this moment? Richmond! Yeah.
Do you know what cocaine is, mate? You ever been to Kittens? No, not Baby Cats. It's a strip club in South Melbourne. That's where I'm going right now. Anyway, Richmond!
Maybe you and Clawson on your AFL podcast, maybe you could dub all of those guys in this year's AFL Grand Final and what they say.
What they're actually saying.
What they're actually saying.
Yeah. Gee,
what was that?
Climate change worrying, isn't it, kid? You ever heard of Greta Thunberg? You guys are ruined. Anyway, you're never going to be able to afford a house. Good luck to you, tussle your hair. Richmond!
Richmond! If your parents aren't already split, they're probably going to get a divorce because most families do end in divorce and you should prepare yourself at four so you are able to cope later in life. Richmond!
50-50, mate. One in every two kids here is going to be in a broken family. Richmond! The polar ice caps are melting and the oceans are rising. Tigers!
Go on, the tigers. Do you know how many koalas actually died in those bushfires? Richmond.
Richmond. Everyone you know.
I suddenly can't wait.
Everyone you know and love is eventually going to die. Tigers!
Tigers! This is the first I've actually been really looking forward to the AFL Grand Final, just for this.
I mean, it would be great also the other way around if the kid came armed with, you know, like if the kid, like if the parents were like, "You're going to present the medal to this person," like, you know, send them a personal message. Like, I wonder if the kids ever say something to the players.
Oh, fuck, like a demonic kid. Mm. Imagine a kid who... you know, it's like an Addams Family kid just standing there. And as the guy bends down, the happiest moment of his finally achieved everything you could as a footballer. And as he's getting the medal, the kid's like, "I'm like a dog and can smell cancer. And you've got 3 months to live.
My mum and dad are forcing me to do this. I don't even like football." Just ruin his moment. Your team played well, but you...
Richmond?
Your team played well, but you had an absolute shocker, mate. You didn't really contribute to this at all. They're going to look down their noses at you at team reunions. Anyway, good luck to you.
Richmond! Richmond! I'm looking at the body language of your family and you may have won a grand final, but nobody likes you.
Nobody likes you, man. Number eight told my mate he's fucking your wife. Richmond!
Number eight. It's always number eight. I was watching the NBA finals this morning between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Miami Heat, and the Miami Heat have hit the finals and have had some bad luck. Like their two best players, or two of their three best players, have been injured and not been able to play. So LA was up 2-0, and I'm an LA guy, and I'm wrapped. Like I want the Lakers to win, but there was a part of me that was like, you know, people will just, you just know what the narrative will be, you know. Oh yeah, you only got it because of a bit of luck and you had things go your way, and that's part of sport. But there was a part of me that was just a little bit bummed out, and then I watched the game today and Miami was really competitive and won it, and now I'm thinking, have I fucking jinxed this NBA final where I suddenly was like, oh, it would have been nice to have a little bit of competition. No, you just want to win. Why did I think that? Now I'm panicking that I have jinxed my team.
Saying that things are nice with a little bit of competition is something you say only if you feel like you're guaranteed to win. You don't actually want genuine competition.
No. No, you don't. You just want to dominate. Like, I do. Like, yes, watching a close match in any sport that you are victorious is great, but also just, like, winning really easily is just so much better on the nerves, especially as you get older. And, you know, you can be enjoying it and sending text messages rather than sitting there intensely hoping that you're not going to end in disappointment.
A close game is good for neutral supporters and the team that's going to lose.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So neutral supporters and the team that's going to lose all want a close game. But the team that's going to win, no, it's much more enjoyable to see them win by heaps.
Like heaps. Like all the points. I want them to win by all the points. And I was really lamenting when they lost today that I was like, oh, don't let this be a snowball that is about to turn into a mountain kind of thing.
Okay. So where are the games being played? Do they actually play in LA or Miami, or are they all in the basketball hub?
Yeah, they're in the bubble. So for anyone who doesn't follow the NBA, the season was close to finishing when it shut down due to COVID. And then they got the last of the teams that made the playoffs, essentially, they took them down to Orlando Disneyland in Florida. And they have set up a bubble where there are courts, there are virtual fans, there are cameras, that nobody can leave the bubble. You play there until your team is knocked out, and then you can go back to the real world. And all the games have been played there. And I have to say, I think they've done a really good job. The virtual fans are such a fantastic idea. It's literally people just sitting at home watching it through their cameras. Some people get dressed up. Like, one person obviously paid for one of those tickets and then just put Baby Yoda there. And I was rapt. I was rapt watching basketball and seeing Baby Yoda really staring intently as a virtual fan. It was really entertaining. And they pump in sound and music, all the stuff that you would get in each team's home game, they pump it in through the speakers, so it kind of feels a little bit like it's happening there. But it's you know what's really interesting about it is this dynamic has been created where it's kind of like watching high school sport, where in high school sport your teammates are the most excited people there because it's your team. But when there's fans, people are a little bit more subdued. You know, there's a little bit more noise. And what's happened is you've started seeing these grown human beings start to revert to that childlike energy and fun, because where else are they going to get it? There's no one else there. So it's kind of like watching really rich varsity sport.
I like that. That's cool. I have not watched any of it. I was hoping that I would watch some of it, but... It's just been one of those years, particularly with, you know, the idea that, like, a lot of the time, if Amy and I are watching TV, it's together. When you're in isolation with each other and you're not really seeing too many other people, it's mostly shared viewing experiences. And she sat down.
So no basketball.
No basketball. She watched, like, a couple of minutes of football with me the other night, and pretty much just so she could watch them do the national anthem and then tell me which one of them she would do or not do. That was pretty much it. She was just like, no, 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 yes, no, 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 no. A lot of no's. Well, it was like a really quick game of Guess Who, put it that way. There was a lot of tiles that were immediately put down.
I'm surprised that there was even one yes, let alone.
There was one. And it really revealed, I won't embarrass her because she would hate that I was even mentioning that there was one. But what I did notice about this man was that he was much more manly than I am. Now, you could say that about most of the players, but this one was demonstrably more manly. He was, like, she picked the most manly looking man on the entire field. And I was just like, right. I guess
the one who,
I guess I'm a real disappointment.
Right.
If that's what you're after, you have not got what you're after.
Yeah. You knew it was coming when she said, oh, I tell you what, that guy has got some strong looking hips.
He does, though. He has very powerful hips.
Yeah. you can't get jealous over that. You go, oh, well, I can't compete with that. Fair enough. It's like me trying to compete with someone with a good head of hair.
Good hair of hair. Perfect eyesight. Nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah, drives a car. Straight through, I'm out. He
swam straight to his car. It's weird. But he swam, literally swam to his car.
Yeah. We're 50 kilometres inland. I actually had a friend of ours who told me, you know when, look, this. I'm going to need you to cast your mind back, but did you ever go through a period when you were single where just out of nowhere friends would, you realise that your friends were talking about you being single and that they've been trying to work out who they could match you up with. Have you ever...
Were you
too young to kind of experience that when you were single?
I think so. I think I was too young. I don't think anybody was... I wasn't aware that that was happening if it was happening.
Right. I think that's a, you know, getting older type of thing, you know, like your friends who are married and they've got kids and it comes from a nice place. They're a little bit worried, but you don't realize it. And so one of my friends just out of nowhere sort of said, we were going to set you up with one of our friends. And I was like, oh, okay, that's great. And then followed it up with... Yeah, but we showed you a photo and she just said that you're too bald.
Oh, no. Brutal.
I know I've got a forehead that you could land an airplane on, but it's not like I'm not bald. I don't mind being disparaged, but like be correct about it. But be like, why are you telling me this? Like what is the point of this conversation? Like, you know what you could have done? Thought you might want to set me up with this person. She says that, and then I never need to know this fucking conversation.
Well, you could say, and in that moment, we realized she was no good for you because she was superficial. Like,
right.
We've never even seen that you are bald. You're not even bald anyway. You just, like you said, you have a high forehead. Like, your hair starts about halfway.
You could watch Interstellar.
Exactly.
On my forehead at IMAX.
It starts back, but it happens. Once you get to it, you have to walk a little further to get to it. But once you get there, it's still fucking happening. There's like...
Yeah, it's just, still there.
It's just a bit further back. It's just a bit more of a walk than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's like a front yard. It's like going to Adelaide and visiting friends and thinking, why have I hit the gate and I'm still walking for ages to get to the front door?
Yeah.
It's still a front door.
It's like they've concreted the bit out the front of the house, but there's still plenty of yard out the back.
Mate, ever since the Greeks moved in, I have lost all that foliage up the front.
But also, I think that you have a haircut that suits your vibe. Like, I actually think that your look gives an impression of... You know, like you're a writer and you got glasses and you've got like kind of, you know, receding but like still kind of cool looking hair. You know, I feel like it's if she's not into that look, then she wouldn't be into the personality, I think. And this is why she's still alone. That's why I've never met her. I don't know who it is, but I would say maybe she's got to have a look at what's wrong with her before she starts ruling people out just because their hair starts a little further back on their head.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a feeling that she is not someone who is going to hear me stand up for the Dark Knight Rises. I have a very strong feeling about that.
Yeah, but if she can't get over a little bit of hair loss, not a substantial amount, then by the 15th time you're playing a David Bowie album to her and explaining what each song means and what it meant in the context of her, I reckon it's not the baldness that's going to get her.
Yeah, I've got heaps of other ways to destroy with boredom and tediousness. When I make her watch every episode of Lost just so I can say at the end, see, it is a good ending. Like, there's heaps of these moments. But it was just such a funny thing to have your friends tell you that they were going to set you up, then give you this disparaging comment. And the little bit at the end was them just kind of shaking their heads going, yeah, I actually thought that was unfair and pretty rude.
So like, why would you tell me? Shushy.
We didn't need... I don't need to be in any of this conversation. Shushy. This is a shushy moment.
Like, you don't need to know that someone you don't know who's never been... That's like them saying, oh, yeah, I was reading some internet comments after under your YouTube channel, and it turns out that somebody doesn't really like... It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know.
You don't need to tell me that.
Mate, like, I already do a really good job of avoiding Twitter comments. Like, I don't need you to be reading them out to me, you know?
Mate, we all know that in the world there's going to be some people who, like, you know, there'll be some people going, oh, you don't have enough hair. Mate, there'll be some people, you've got too much hair.
Right.
You can never win. If you had more hair, people would complain about that.
Yeah. Who does he think he is, trying to be young with all that hair? Trying to be a go-getter. We know he's 48. My mum's mad for fucking reading comments online. Like, there was, I wrote something at the beginning of the pandemic. I just wrote something stupid on Twitter. It was when everyone was down at Bondi, and I just wrote a 3-part thing, you know, calling out to Scott Morrison. Hey, are these people being unsafe, or are they fucking legends? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Send it off. Didn't really think anything more of it. And then the next morning, got online and just found it had gone gangbusters. And I saw all these comments underneath and I thought, you know what? I have a feeling most of them are going to be really good, but yeah. I reckon there'll be some that will not be. So, you know what? I won't read any of them. The tweet's done its job. Let's move on. And then Mum went and had a look, and then she calls me and says, oh, I saw that tweet went really well. I said, yeah, don't read any comments. And then she said, oh, no, these are my favourites. And then she told me 3 that were her favourites, especially the one where someone had called me a communist. And I think Mum, being the lefty that she is, growing up in the Don Dunstan Cockwell era.
Never prouder of you than in that moment. Like, she was like...
the shit I have actually achieved, and now I've got to respect.
I think you'll find that Hardnuts 65492 says that you're a communist, and I've never been prouder of you, son.
That's my boy. But it's funny telling people who don't really live or have much to do with social media. It's a very funny thing to try and explain to them. I just don't need to know. I just don't need to know. You don't need to tell me. It's all good.
Or to say to them, that's just what that place is like. Don't worry. Like, that's just what... There's always going to be somebody who doesn't like something. That's just the nature of the place that has been created. So don't get too concerned about it. Speaking of people... Now, this might get out of date very quickly because of, you know, how rapidly things seem to be evolving in the final series of America. But it's
Jesus, yeah. This season's really coming to a crescendo, and I don't know if they've renewed it.
No, the analogy that I've been using is it's the final series of Game of Thrones. They've gone off book.
Oh, dear.
And they've jammed 6 seasons of storylines into 6 episodes instead of 6 seasons. That really feels what it's like. And there still feels like there's some twists up the sleeve. We've still got the election to come, which is kind of like, you know, your big finale that we're working towards in this series. And have you been, are you engaged in that? Are you following along with what's happening?
It's so funny. I think you have to be, like, you have to be to kind of be spatially aware of what's going on in the world. But I'm also at the same time trying to avoid the minutiae. So I watched a little bit of the debate to feel like probably just enough to feel like the world is awful watching two old white men just talk at each other and over each other. And it was like, yeah, no, I've got a taste of this. I don't need any more of that. And now I'm really curious about what's going to happen with Trump having COVID, because his thing has always been his physical presence. you know, he used it in such an awful but effective way against Hillary Clinton. And now, you know, even that photo they put up of him, I think maybe it was this morning or yesterday, it's in the last 7 days, where he was getting over COVID, and he looks like he looks properly insane. Like, they haven't managed to get that mink rug on his head and flattened. It's kind of all everywhere, and he's trying to kind of give the thumbs up. And I'm just wondering, and I don't know if it's because I'm hoping a little bit, but I'm just wondering if this is a proper chink in the armor.
It'll be interesting, and we'll know by the time this comes out probably, because things are, you know, happening so quickly. It's like
so quickly.
It was even amazing because I spoke to Dave Anthony today on the day that we're recording this. People will have already heard that because I squeezed in an emergency episode with Dave because I was like, I need to get your comments on what is going on while it's fucking going on. And
how is he?
Well, the debate was the one where he was just like, it's impossible to argue with Trump now because he's just like a toddler. The way we spoke about it was he's the drunk heckler at the comedy club who's impossible to deal with, because a normal heckler, you know, they say something, you say something, there can be a back and forward. It can even be good for the show. But that drunken heckler who just keeps talking over the top of your comebacks and your punchlines and whatever, who is impossible to fucking deal with, that's what Trump is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, exactly. And there is no way, like, the only way to deal with the drunk heckler is to have someone in charge of the room walk them out.
Yeah, that's what should have happened. A security guard should have come in, tapped him on the shoulder, got Trump to gather up his shit, and he should have gone and gathered up Melania and the rest of the family and just gone, guys, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
You can't stay. Don't worry about the bill.
You're fucking up the show for other people. We'll take care of that, but you've got to leave. We're going to put you in a cab.
You've just got to go. Yeah, it's really depressing. And I don't, it's almost like, I honestly have no idea what's going to happen. Like, if, I know it seems a little bit far-fetched that he won't leave, but there has been so much that's happened that seems far-fetched. It doesn't seem that far-fetched.
Well, I mean, it's not far-fetched because every time they say guarantee that you won't leave, you won't say it. So that, I think, doesn't make it far-fetched. It makes it an absolute fucking reality that he would consider contesting the result or getting people to rise up against the result, because on the numerous occasions where he's been given an opportunity to say, hey, guarantee us that you won't do this, he has refused to give that guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I tell you what, he did actually make Twitter a place of inspiration again through his actions, and it was inadvertent, but it did make me feel very happy about Twitter for a weekend, and that was when the term Proud Boys was trending, and when you clicked on it, it was just heaps of hot gay men who were really muscly, not wearing much, and that made me very happy that a whole lot of people had made that happen.
I mean, it just does open up the possibility that somebody goes to the wrong meeting, and that's going to be a shock when you walk through the door.
Walking in all closed-minded, wondering, what are all these colours doing in here?
Well, this makes sense. It's all men. That's good. This is what I was expecting.
Music's a bit more upbeat than I was
just a little more.
For. Yeah. A lot more cake. What is happening here?
Didn't feel like there'd be quite as much MDMA, but, you know, sure.
Yeah. What is that? Is that amyl?
Never really realized that this white supremacist organization was so reliant on amyl.
Yeah.
Man. Hey, Justin Hamilton, thank you for doing this. We will finish it up because I know that you've stuck around a little bit because I had to wash horse shit off Winnie. So
look,
I am now going to go. Upstairs, I am going to wash the towels that I used to dry her off, so all evidence of the crime has been destroyed, and then we will be okay. So thank you very much for doing this. People can find all your podcasts at justinhamilton.com. Tell us about what's going on. .au?
Throw in the .au. I think there's a justinhamilton.com who in the States was very nice. I think he worked in the Senate, actually. He used to, when I used to have an email there, he used to pass on a lot of really nice stuff. And you know what? Even when he was really annoyed by the end, he was still really nice. No. So maybe write to him as well. Tell him you got a shout out in Australia.
So yes, your podcasts are called Tell People About What's Going On.
The Big Squid Podcast. It is a podcast where I get together with my friends and we celebrate all different types of art and entertainment, from movies to TV to music to short stories, etc. And, you know, it can be, you know, any episode can be any sort of topic in that regard, but essentially we're just celebrating the stories and the art that inspire us.
Thank you for doing this, my friend.
Thank you.